We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to the Chicago Audible Podcast, changing up the way Bears fans stay up to date on their favorite team since 2015. Now get ready, because it's time to bear down. Welcome back, Bears fans, to the 350th episode of the Chicago Audible Podcast. I'm your host, Will DeWitt. I want to thank you for tuning in this week. 350 episodes is quite the accomplishment, one that we'd never reach if not for your strong support throughout the years. So for that, I just wanted to start off the show by thanking each and every one of you. Now, today's show is a little bit different, as there is no Brandon nor Nick. And if you must know, they are working hard for our free agency preview show that we'll record on Monday. So what's on today's agenda? Well, I'm glad you asked. First, I'm going to share an interview that I had with author Robert Peters, who recently released an in-depth analysis on the 2018 Chicago Bears offense. And afterwards, I'm going to sit down with two guys who always put in great work on our blog and website. They're our draft gurus. And I'll be having an insightful conversation with them on their takeaways from the 2019 NFL Combine. So we have plenty to get to. So without another moment, let's go ahead and dive into my conversation with Robert Peters on his book, The 2018 Chicago Bears Complete Offensive Manual. Hey, Robert, I want to thank you again for taking the time out to talk about your new book. I want to know, how's it going? And number two, can I still call you Bobby?
Yeah, Bobby is good. Bobby is actually the on the cover of the book, I've got Bobby as my name for the author. So to avoid any miscommunication there, that's if anyone wants to, you know, if they're trying to find the book, it's Bobby Peters on the front cover. So to alleviate any confusion there.
There you go. Yeah, I was telling you just a few minutes before we settled down to start recording, I was a little confused on which way I should take your name, but Bobby it is. But you ready to talk about the Chicago Bears offense?
Absolutely.
All right, so I just want to know, after doing your research on that Bears offense for 2018, how would you assess the play call as a whole? Do you believe that Matt Nagy was simplifying some things for Mitch Trubisky?
So as far as the simplification goes, at times that was definitely the case, especially when Mitch would struggle. You know, kind of taking a step back to that, the first part of your question, you know, just assessing the play calling as a whole. I think Matt Nagy did an awesome job as a play caller in 2018. And by that, I mean pushing the right buttons at the right times. There were games like the Tampa Bay game, for instance, where he had a great game plan and Mitch was comfortable with it. So he just kept dialing up shot after shot downfield. And against what Tampa was doing, it worked perfectly. And then if you fast forward, you know, to week 14 against the Rams, you know, that was a classic case of where Mitch struggled in the beginning of the game. And I'm sure Coach Nagy had, you know, similar shots built in. You know, every game plan, he's got shots built in. But, you know, that game, because it didn't start off the way he wanted to, he adapted. And then one drive specifically in the third quarter where they utilized a specific RPO concept to move the ball down the field and eventually hit Bradley Soule in the end zone for a touchdown on the infamous Santa's Slay play. That drive was a classic example of Matt Nagy adapting his play calling to how his quarterback was playing.
Excellent. Yeah, so I'm excited to see how that can, of course, evolve here in year two. But looking back at last year, one of the big emphases that was put on all offseason and the main talking point was the RPO. And it seemed like you really couldn't go without a single conversation about Matt Nagy and his offense without mentioning the RPO at least once. So for all the talk, I'm curious, did they run it as much as you anticipated before breaking down the film? And on top of that, was the RPO a success?
So, yes, they certainly used it. They would mix it in with basically, there's a few exceptions, you know, with maybe, you know, with the jet sweeps and then draw, you know, traditional draw plays being the two main exceptions that pop in my head right now. They would combine the RPO concept with basically every run scheme they used, both zone and gap schemes. And it did add an element to those run concepts. What it does is it forces the defense to honor the edge, you know, the receivers on the edge. And if they didn't, then, you know, Mitch was great about making the right reads on those concepts in 2018. And if they didn't honor it, then the ball would get to the edge and the Bears would typically have a numbers advantage or a leverage advantage, depending on the pass play that they called with it to pick up a good chunk of yards.
So in terms of some like unique trends, what did you find about the Bears offense while conducting your research for this book?
All right. So I guess as far as trends go, just looking at their most common concepts, two just popped to my head as far as the dropback pass game is concerned. One of them is the Henk concept. This concept is a staple in the Andy Reid West Coast system. It's, you know, something you can see with the Chiefs run. You can see the Eagles with Doug Peterson run it quite often. And obviously Matt Nagy ran it quite often with the Bears this past season. What it is, it's basically the curl flat concept. The outside receivers run curls. In most variations, the Bears had multiple variations, but that's probably the more common ones. And then flat routes would come from either the tight ends or the running backs or slot receivers. And then, you know, if the tight end wasn't running a flat route, typically he would be assigned to run what we call a ball route, where he sits down basically 5 yards over the center to occupy the middle hook defenders to try to open up the curl and the flat routes. And if the defense wouldn't honor that, then he would be the first read for the quarterback on that in the progression on that play. So that was one of their most heavily used concepts. And then the cover concept that I used for the cover image of the book is probably the most used dropback concept that the Bears used this past season. I refer to it in the book as HB read with spot dig. So what that means is the halfback out of the backfield will run an option route, and he'll typically be the primary on that play. And to the bunch side of the formation, the Bears would call what I refer to as a spot dig concept. So it's your traditional spot concept with a flat route, kind of an angled hitch route, and then a corner. But instead of the receiver running a corner, the Bears would have him run a dig route. And what this concept does is if a defense decided to double team the option route runner, which was typically Tariq Cohen out of the backfield, then the spot dig concept would place the two underneath defenders to the other side of the field that were assigned to that side of the field. They would be in a 3-on-2 horizontal stretch. So it basically gave the quarterback an answer versus any coverage. And it was a very strong concept for the Bears. They averaged, I believe, right around 8 yards per play when they called that concept. So it was definitely an efficient one for them to call off.
All right, a couple of follow-up questions here. Let's go back to the Henk, the curl flat variation that you mentioned. I did notice in your book that 31 of the 40 plays were called on Chicago's side of the field. Do you believe there's a particular reason for that? Is it easier to maybe begin a drive and sustain it using this sort of play concept? What's the difference between using that on your own side of the 50 compared to when you reach enemy territory, as you will?
That's a really good question. And my, you know, obviously, you know, without, you know, discussing with Coach Nagy, I think my reasoning for that would be exactly what you said. It's a good drive starter. It's a good, all right, you know, we typically, you know, in beginning of drives, especially on first and second down, when they would most call this concept, you're going to get cover three or some variation of single high coverage defense, which the hand concept is tailor made for. The reason you get those coverages on those early downs is they're typically, I mean, I know the NFL's changing and it's a passing league more now more than ever, but those downs from a defensive perspective are typically seen as rundowns, and, you know, going single high safety, you get that extra run defender in the box. So that's typically when you would see it, and that's typically when the Bears would call it. And, you know, it's a relatively simple read too, and it was one that Mitch, you know, Mitch consistently went through with a pretty good, he had a pretty good feel for it. So that's probably the reasoning for that. And then, you know, too, with that, you're just talking on the other side of the 50. So it's not a great red zone concept just because you don't have the vertical stretch element of it. Or, you know, in the red zone, you're not, you know, defenders aren't threatened vertically. So they can, they're more likely to sit on the curl routes. And, you know, if a defense doesn't have much of a vertical threat, if they're able to sit on the curl routes, the five underneath the routes don't necessarily give the quarterback, a good chance to find an open receiver. And another element of that too is, you know, before they get into the red zone, especially with an aggressive coach like Matt Nagy, that's a good time to take a shot. And the hand concept definitely does not fall into the shot play category. So, you know, anywhere from the opponent's 30 to 45 yard line ish, that's a good area of the field to take a shot. And, like I said, the hand concept doesn't really fit into that. So that's probably, you know, a combination of all those things is probably why they called it a majority of the time in their own territory.
Now, earlier as well, you talked about Tariq Cohen being the primary option back out of the backfield, which makes a ton of sense on the surface. I'm just curious to your thoughts on the Bears offense when Jordan Howard is in the game versus a Tariq Cohen. Obviously, just watching the games, it felt like when Howard is out there, it felt like 10 times more likely to run the football compared to when Tariq Cohen is out there. Was that as cut and dry as maybe some of those general assumptions maybe?
So I don't have the exact splits. I didn't do an exact split-based breakdown by personnel from that standpoint. But when Tariq Cohen was in the game, as far as the passing game is concerned, they were definitely – the playbook was definitely much more wide open. That concept that I was discussing, that HB Reed concept, that – yeah, I can count on, you know, I think it might be week one against Green Bay. They ran it a few times with Jordan Howard in the fourth quarter. And I think Coach Nagy quickly realized that concept was not for Jordan Howard. And, you know, Tariq Cohen excelled at it throughout the season from there on out. So, like I said, it's clear, you know, with Cohen in the game, it was clearly more wide open. And then there was one exception, though. When the Bears were in a 2x2 set in the book, that spot dig concept that I was referring to earlier, they would run that out of a 2x2 set and have the running back run a flat route. And typically they would use Jordan Howard in that role. And that was probably the main way they would use him in the passing game. So I don't know if that was an intent to use that one specific concept to break tendencies, or if Jordan Howard was comfortable running that route. I don't know what the reasoning for that was, but that was really the one where they would feature Howard as part of the read in a drop back pass sense. But, no, I mean, every concept that the Bears use off of the spot dig concept, different ways to attack down the field too. Tariq Cohen would be in the game there to give the threat of him being the primary on those plays as well.
Interesting. Now, the Bears, of course, last year, they were very good in the red zone. They actually had the sixth best red zone offense in the NFL last season. They're able to punch it in on about 2/3 of their red zone trips. I'm just curious, what kind of insight can you provide us on the concepts used in that green area of the field? Like, what was behind the success in the red zone?
So a couple, three main concepts come to my mind as you were asking that. So the first one is, as Bears fans will remember very vividly, especially that Santa's sleigh play that I just mentioned earlier, the trick plays that the Bears use. If you got the book and you look in that section, you can see how efficient these plays were in the red zone and on third down situations. And you can see that contributes a large percentage of it too. You know, Coach Nagy, you know, he said in many of his post game interviews that these are plays they practice for high leverage situations like that. And, you know, he had the guts to call them in those situations too. And a majority of the time they worked. You know, I off the top of my head, I can't really think of, other than the, the play in the wild card game where they motioned Khalil Mack out of the backfield. I believe that's the only trick play that really didn't work for the Bears in 2018. So that's number one in my book. Number two, the shovel pass. That was a huge play for them on third down. And even I think they converted a fourth down against Arizona with it as well in the red zone. But also at the goal line, they used that to convert for touchdowns as well. So that was another concept. And then number three, their use of what I refer to in the book as man pick plays. They use a variety of different ways to create picks or rubs against man coverage. And down in the red zone, you see it, you know, almost exclusively variations of man or bracket coverage, and running these plays to free up receivers off of one-on-one matchups where you get a receiver picking a defender, you know, freeing up a receiver. Those plays were extremely successful for the Bears in the red zone as well. So those are the top three ways that they would create red zone efficiency.
All right, now let's kind of flip it here, because even though the Bears were great in the red zone, they were also very good on third downs last year. What kind of game planning did you see from Matt Nagy that he employed on third down that really enabled his offense to rank 11th in the league on that money down?
So in third down situations, the Bears definitely had concepts they would lean on third downs. And those are, you can see throughout the book, those are clear. For each concept in the book, I have a usage chart. It shows you, okay, the Bears called this play X number of times on first down, X number of times on second and long, X number of times on third and short. Second and short, and then X number of times on third down, and what their conversion percentage was on third down, as well as their average yards per play for the other situations. Going throughout the film and you know, just looking throughout the big picture throughout the season, one of the biggest reasons they were successful on third downs was Mitch Trubisky's running ability. In third and medium to longer situations, when defenses covered up open receivers down the field, he was very quick and adept at taking off. I think week 7 against the Patriots shows a few really good examples of that, where everything's covered up and he takes off and they convert a third down that, you know, most quarterbacks in the NFL wouldn't be able to because they don't have the mobility of Trubisky. So that on third downs, big picture, is what jumped out to me when studying the film.
Now, let's get back to Jordan Howard, because we did talk a little bit about him as a receiver. And right now, there's just so much talk surrounding that running back and his future on this football team. So I'm just curious about just a little bit of glimpse of the running game. What worked? What didn't? Did the Bears maybe change their approach throughout the season? Because obviously they did find more success in the latter part of the year.
So the running game was an interesting study. So there's a lot of different aspects to it. Like I said earlier when we were talking about different parts of the run game in the RPOs discussion, they used a ton of different schemes to try to get the running game working, especially through the first 10 weeks of the season. They made a conscious effort to, okay, this didn't work one week, now we're going to try this the next week. And, you know, a lot of these schemes aren't terribly common throughout the NFL, but they're more common in college football with teams that run a ton of RPOs and just spread offenses, just, you know, being creative with who you're pulling, who you're kicking out, who you're leading through on, you know, as far as gap schemes are concerned. And then as well as, you know, having a ton of variation within their zone running schemes too. There was, you know, when they got the running game going, finally, in week 11 against the Vikings, there's this, a variation off the inside zone scheme that at that point in the season kind of propelled the coaching staff to feature inside zone throughout the rest of the season. And that's kind of when the Bears ended up having more success, was when they used more zone running and got away from the gap schemes a little bit. But the specific adjustment they used in week 11 that had a ton of success against the Vikings on this concept, they called it about 6 or 8 times. In my book, I call it, it's titled Inside Zone Lock Insert. So what that means is it's an inside zone scheme where the offensive linemen all block one way and they try to get vertically so they can get up to the linebackers quickly. The backside guard and tackle, the backside tackle for sure, but the guard kind of depends on how the defensive line aligns. They will block back and they will block the defenders to the gap away from them. And the tight end or H-back, instead of blocking the backside defensive end, will insert in that gap, the open gap on the backside, to lead up on the weak side linebacker. And this adjustment against the Vikings, they averaged, like I said, they called it about 6 or 8 times, and they averaged over 5 yards a carry when calling this adjustment. And it just, you know, the offensive line had an easier job of blocking the down linemen. They didn't have to climb up as aggressively to get to speedier linebackers. It allowed Trey Burton, he was the tight end on a majority of the carries when they would call this, to climb up and block the weak side linebacker. And, you know, obviously Burton blocking a linebacker, you know, you can match, you know, speed for speed a little bit more in that sense. And Jordan Howard ran downhill real hard on those plays, and he hit the hole hard, you know, to pick up positive yards. So week 11 was kind of when the run game kind of, you know, shifted towards more of a zone scheme.
Good stuff there, Bobby. Now, one of the themes that Matt Nagy has talked about since the end of the season is throwing out the things that either didn't work or that the guys don't like and installing more that the group does like and what works. So using that as a baseline, what do you believe we should expect less and more of from the Bears offense in 2019?
So one thing specifically that I discussed towards the end of the book that I think could help out the Bears with one of their concepts that they struggled with is the concept is the wide receiver quick screen. This was something that Matt Nagy and the blocking he brought over from Kansas City, they used to hit Tyreek Hill on these quick screens just to get the ball in his hands to the edge real quick. Like the whole offensive line, they're reach blocking real hard to that side in order to try to get up on linebackers and any secondary defenders that are down as well. And just to get the ball to the edge quick, get defenders moving. And that was a successful play for Nagy in Kansas City in 2017, but it just didn't work for a variety of reasons for the Bears in 2018. You know, on some concepts, the receiver, you know, whether it be Cohen, Gabriel, Miller, Anthony Miller was the target on a few of them. Whether the receiver wasn't patient enough with his blocking, or whether on a few occasions Mitch Trubisky made inaccurate throws on those passes. One thing I discussed in the book is the Bears had no double moves off of that action, really. And having a double move like a screen and go, or even a double pass off of that, if they call it from under center, would be a way to kind of protect that concept. Because more often than not, as the season progressed, when the Bears would throw those quick screens, corners and safeties and nickel defenders would try to jump it pretty quickly and get out there before like the offensive line had a chance to pull. So that was one element that I saw as something that Nagy could add to for 2019. And there were a few concepts when you go through the book, you can see that the Bears really didn't have success with, like the scissors concept, for example. That's, you know, a common play throughout football. It's great against cover three, great against cover four quarters coverage. The Bears ran a multitude of variations, but you know, Mitch Trubisky just wasn't comfortable reading that play throughout the season. And it just, for whatever reason, didn't work well for them. So whether they make adjustments to that or completely scrap it for 2019, you know, that's remained to be seen.
Great stuff. Now, as you know, in our private conversations, you know, I really love your book, and I've been excited for it ever since you told me that you are more than likely going to write it all the way back in October for the show you run during the bye week. Now, you did a great job now of just answering a few questions about the offense, but I wanted to go ahead and let you take a moment to explain to our listeners why they should pick up a copy for themselves.
Yeah, so I wrote the book with the intention of it being kind of a manual, like a concept index for, you know, high school, college coaches who are looking for ideas, looking for why things worked, why things didn't. If you're a fan though, and you follow football closely, I think you would be able to understand a majority of what's in the book as well. Especially if you're a Bears fan. I mean, if anything, it's a great key. You know, I'm a Bears fan myself. You know, I live in the Chicagoland area. I grew up a Bears fan. So writing this book was probably my favorite project that I've undertaken. So, as a Bears fan, I hold this one near and dear to my heart. And, you know, if anything, it's a great memento for the 2018 season. You know, you can look back and you can say, oh yeah, I remember when the Bears ran that and, you know, it worked, you know, why it worked, why it didn't, you know, and obviously all the trick plays are in there. You're like Oompa Loompa, Willy Wonka, Santa Slay, you know, all that good stuff. So, you know, if anything, if you learn one or two things from it, you know, that's great. But if you're just a Bears fan looking for something to have a keepsake for the 2018 season, I obviously highly recommend it. And one thing that, you know, listeners of this podcast will understand and appreciate more than anybody else is I set the price for the book on Amazon for the price of $19.85. And right now with it being out and, you know, it's usually in the beginning, you know, obviously you get a rush of sales in the beginning. So Amazon dropped the price, but, you know, like I don't know how they do that or how they decide to do that, but they did. So I was a little disappointed because, you know, the price of $19.85, you know, I thought was a little bit of a nod to the, you know, one of the greatest teams of all time. And, you know, Bears fans can appreciate that. So
I like that. Yeah, we did very something similar when we had a different name for this podcast, and we're selling some apparel, and I had t-shirts for 1922. So I like how you think.
Yeah, it was one of those things that, you know, when I was, finished up with the book, I'm like, you know what, you know, this is, this makes a lot of sense, and it's a little inside joke that, you know, not joke, but, you know, it's a little inside nod that, you know, obviously Bears fans would get. You know, I'm sure most football fans would understand it too, but Bears fans would appreciate that, see that, you know, maybe chuckle at it a little bit, or I don't know. I don't even know if anybody's noticed that yet either, so who knows.
You know, I did not, but as like you said, it's because Amazon decided to dip the price. So I'd even look what it was originally, but now I'm going to look and I'm going to understand and I'm going to appreciate it just for you.
Yeah, there you go.
Now, that's all I really do have for you today, Bobby. Again, thanks for the insight on your book. It sure sounds like something that, again, a lot of Bears fans should get a ton of value out of. I know just for me reading it, I've learned so much about Matt Nagy's offense just by reading it. And I love how you have it broken down by the different protections, the quarterback read on different concepts. You can learn a little bit more about what's going through the head of a Mitchell Trubisky in certain game situations, certain plays. That way, come next season, if there's a play or two that I want to gripe about, I can kind of go back through this book as a reference and know, well, what was he supposed to be looking for? What should he be thinking about? And kind of use that as a good judgment tool. So it's really neat, and I really appreciate it. And real quick for our Bears fans, if you're looking for the 2018 Chicago Bears Complete Offensive Manual on Amazon, for convenience, I made a quick short link. Just go to chicagoaudible.com/book. And then you should be able to redirect directly to the Amazon page to pick up your copy today. So, Bobby, I want to thank you again for your time and for an awesome book. I really do appreciate the time you took for the podcast. And, again, the great work on this book.
Thanks for having me on, Will. And I know Bears fans will appreciate this book more than most. And I was, like I said, it was a fun project to do. It was probably the most fun I've had doing a project.
I hope that you enjoyed that conversation with Bobby and that you grab yourself a copy of his book to learn more about last year's offense. Up next, I'll have Steve Letizia and Chris Bakker on the show to lend us their expertise and provide you with the information that you should know from this year's Combine. But first, I need to call a quick time out and tell you about our show sponsor, SeatGeek. Getting tickets to your favorite game online can just be far too complicated. With hundreds of sites and varying levels of reliability, it's hard to know exactly who you should trust. And that's why we're proud to partner with SeatGeek. And really, they're the way to go. What makes SeatGeek unique is that they can pull millions of tickets into one place so you can easily find the seats that you want for a price that you're willing to pay. There's nothing quite like being at the event that you want to be at in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. Now, being Bears fans just like you, we wouldn't be where we are without SeatGeek. They have allowed us to continue to grow our brand and provide you, our listener, with some great deals throughout the years. And on top of that, SeatGeek is my personal favorite way to shop for tickets. I've used them in the past for various Bears games, other sporting events, and even some concerts as well. Because the reason why I love SeatGeek is that they're going to get me the best deal possible for the tickets that I want. Plus, they allow me to set notifications for the teams, like the Bears, or events that I care about the most, which is extremely convenient and useful. Plus, every ticket is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. So go ahead and make SeatGeek your go-to ticket source from everything from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. And the best part of all is that our listeners get $10 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code BEARS today. That's promo code BEARS, B-E-A-R-S, for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Alrighty, you're listening to the 350th episode of the Chicago Audible Podcast. I'm Eros Wildewitt, and I'm now joined by two of our site writers, Steve Letizia and Chris Bakker, and I'm going to pick their brain about the NFL Combine that just wrapped up a couple of days ago. Fellas, I appreciate you taking the time to coming on the show. I want to know, how have you guys been? And let's go to Chris first, because I haven't heard from him in quite some time.
I've been good. I don't know, just kind of coming down from the high of a first good season in a while. Enjoying my time in school right now. I had two tests today, actually. I'm excited to be back on the podcast.
What were your tests in?
One was in history of the Middle East, and one was in biology.
Which one was tougher?
biology because I'm a history major, so I actually felt like I was prepared for that one.
That makes sense to me. Steve, how have you been, man? Are you, it's been only a couple of weeks?
Yeah, it hasn't been too long. I've been good, just watching the combine, watching some prospects. Didn't have any tests today, just sat at a desk for 8 hours. So, I've been good.
Would you rather have taken those two tests?
Probably not. I would have failed both those tests for sure.
All right. So you guys are ready to talk about the combine. I'm just going to jump right on into just a handful plus questions that I have for the both of you. And Steve, I'm going to direct this first one over to you. Of course, the Bears are in need of some depth at outside linebacker. And we've been talking about it off and on this offseason. And that need just got a little bit larger as the Bears are planning to release Sam Macho. So based off of the combine, who are a couple of prospects that intrigue you the most that may be able to fill this void?
Yeah, so I wrote about a few of them today, so I won't go into too much detail on them. But Max Crosby from Eastern Michigan and Ben Benogu from TCU, they both did really well at the combine. Good height, good weight, good athleticism. I believe one thing I look at for edge rushers is really the three-cone drill. Because it shows off the flexibility and the bend for the pass rushers need to go around the offensive tackles. And Max Crosby was actually below a 7, which is what you want. And then Benogu was right above a 7. So those are two guys that I really liked. Another guy that I was a big fan of kind of going in the draft, he was a little bit of a sleeper of mine, was Jamal Davis from Akron. I wrote about him briefly today, but I didn't go into too much detail. But he's a guy who's that. When you watch the tape, the athleticism is very clear. So I was kind of expecting him to do pretty well at the combine. And then when he did well at the combine, it just kind of validated what I saw on tape. So he's very raw. It'd be a 7th round flyer at best, probably. But he's a guy you can kind of draft in the 7th round and stash on your practice squad.
Finally, a bed that senses snoring and automatically responds. Meet the Ergo Smart Base from Tempur-Pedic, our first system that detects snoring, then automatically adjusts by raising the bed. Get your best sleep all night, every night. For a limited time, save up to $500 on select adjustable mattress sets and experience the deep, undisturbed sleep of Tempur-Pedic. Get full offer details at Tempur-Pedic.com.
How about you, Chris? Do you have any outside linebackers that maybe Steve hasn't brought up that are kind of on your radar at this stage of the offseason?
I was going to mention Justin Hollins. He played in the Senior Bowl. He had a pretty good combine, a 4.5 second 40-yard dash, the three-cone drill in 7.06, good 20-yard shuttle, good vertical jump. He's kind of built like Leonard Floyd. He's a taller, leaner linebacker. Doesn't have the best bend, but just a traits guy that you might take a chance on when you have so few picks.
Now, let's kind of flip it to the Bears offense real quick. And Chris, I know you just went ahead and you wrote an article earlier this week about 5 studs on offense that you believe could be a fit on this Bears offense. But let's go ahead and start at running back, because all the talk about Jordan Howard, I mean, it just came out earlier today that Adam Schefter, he said that the Bears have been offered multiple different offers from different teams, at least talks, in terms of maybe trading for a Jordan Howard. So at the running back position, based off of this combine, do you have a couple of, quote, ideal prospects in mind that you wouldn't mind Ryan Pace maybe scooping up in this draft to bolster that position?
Well, the two guys I wrote about in my article, Miles Sanders and Justice Hill, were, I think, are probably the best fits. I know Nick wrote about David Montgomery, and I think he'd be a good fit. He just underwhelmed me a little bit as far as his testing goes. I was a little bit surprised to see just, how rough his testing was. Devin Singletary, I thought, might have been a good fit, but he's another guy who just didn't test well. Overall, this running back class, at least at the combine, was pretty underwhelming, which isn't exactly encouraging for Bears fans, knowing that they might be a running back away from, doing some really big things this year. I think they obviously showed they can win with a guy like Jordan Howard, but I think that getting a running back might put them over the top, but this might not be the best draft class to get that in.
Now, Steve, it looked like you're shaking your head here in the recording of this podcast. Do you agree that this running back class is underwhelming?
Yeah, especially athletically. I do agree that Miles Sanders would be a great fit. I'm just worried that he might have tested out of the Bears' range. He might go in the second round now. But I do like him a lot. I like Justice Hill as well, too. But yeah, athletically, this is not a great draft class for running backs. One guy that I like that I'm going to keep pounding the table for, I wrote about him a couple times already, is Alexander Mattison from Boise State. He wasn't fast in the 40. He ran a 4.67 40, so obviously that's very slow. But he did have a 1.51 10-yard split, which is actually third best among running backs. And then had a did well in the broad jump and vertical jump, which shows lower body explosiveness, and then did okay in the agility drills. And at 221 pounds, he's a bit of a bigger back. So I was actually pretty pleased with his combine performance. I think he'd be a late round guy, another late round guy that they might be able to steal late in the draft.
All right, I want to put both of you on the spot here. Again, it's the first week of March. Things can change between now and May, but as of today, if you had to choose one running back out of this year's draft class, even if it is an underwhelming class at that, who would it be? Steve, you're up first.
If I had to choose one running back, it would be Miles Sanders, I think. I think he'd be a perfect fit with the Bears do. He's a little bit bigger than kind of Justice Hill. I think he was like 211 pounds, something like that, which isn't huge, but he has enough size to run between the tackles. And then his lateral agility is just amazing. I think he might be my running back two right now, and possibly even the best running back in draft.
What about you, Chris?
Is it strictly guys from the combine? Because there was actually a guy who had a pro day today mm-hmm. from Nebraska that I think would be a pretty good running back fit. Divine Azigbo, I think is how you say his last name. I'm not exactly sure about that. But from the combine, I might just go with David Montgomery, just because even though he does lack the explosion and lack the long speed, he's a go back and watch the tape guy, and you knew that he wasn't going to test very well, and he still was good on tape. So I think it probably, if I had to, Miles Sanders would be my first choice, but number two is probably David Montgomery, at least from the guys at the combine.
All right, Steve, I want to flip it back to you, and I want to kind of change perspective back to the Bears defense, and let's look at secondary. Based off of that combine, do you have a couple of names either at cornerback or safety that Bears fans should be keeping their eye on?
Yeah, I have a few safeties that I like at least. One of them is Imani Hooker from Iowa. I really liked his tape when I watched him. Very instinctive, good in zone and man coverage. My one concern about him was his athleticism, because he did look a little bit stiff in some of the games that I watched. But he blew away the combine. He was actually one of the more athletic players of the combine. So you have to go back and watch again to see if maybe I missed something. But he's a player I really like, but you probably have to take him the third round if you want him. And then one other guy I like, he didn't test at the combine. I believe he was injured, but Mike Edwards from Kentucky. They're kind of similar players, actually. Mike Edwards might be a little bit smaller, but they can both play man and zone coverage, which I think we're going to need out of our state. You need your safeties to be able to play man coverage, especially in Pagano's defense. We know he's going to blitz a lot, so you need your safeties to be able to pick up the slack in man coverage. So those are two players I really like.
What about you, Chris? As of right now, still no new contract for Adrian Amos or Bryce Callahan. So if you're looking to fill those potential voids, which way do you lean?
There's a Darnell Savage from Maryland. He's just he actually tested pretty well, too, at the combine. He's a little bit undersized, but just got speed, and I like his closing speed. He might not be available where the Bears are picking, though. He might be drafted a little bit earlier. I think you'd have to draft him in the third round for sure if you want to get him.
Now let's go ahead and look at the wideout position, because obviously that's not the largest need on this team by far. And even despite that fact, the Bears may still decide to use one of their picks at the position. And Chris, I know in your offensive studs, you did talk about a couple of wideouts. So do you have a couple of favorite receivers that showed out at the combine that would be a good fit with that current squad?
I think they need speed. So obviously, you know, the two guys I wrote about are extremely fast. Mecole Hardman ran a 4.33. Paris Campbell ran a 4.31. If they're looking at wide receiver, I think that's what they got to be looking at first and foremost. Another couple players that tested really well as far as their speed, and it's evident on tape, is Terry McLaurin from Ohio State, who had a really good Senior Bowl, and then Emmanuel Hall, who's just, he's a natural separator. I've seen, you know, people say that you get to watch the tape and it's so evident. He's got really long stride. I think he's 6'2", like 190, and he just it doesn't look like he's moving fast, and then he's three steps behind you. Like, so I think if they're going to go with receiver, it's going to be that type of player, someone who can really stretch the defense.
Mm-hmm. Steve, I want to go to for you next year. Is there a position, either offense or defense, that really just underwhelms you from the top to the bottom this year? One that really either nobody sticks out or one that's just extremely thin?
Yeah, definitely the cornerback position for me, at least. Even the top guys, even the guys that the Bears don't have no chance of drafting, I don't really like that much. The guys with good tape are slow, and the guys with bad tape are fast. So I don't really like anyone really at that position. I mean, there are a few guys I like. There is one guy later in the draft, Hamp Cheevers, who I like from Boston College. He is way undersized. I think he was only like 169 pounds at the combine, which is pretty, wow, pretty small. But he's got great footwork. And he's got good coverage ability. He might have some struggles adjusting to the next level because he is so small, but I do like his coverage ability. And then there was another guy, David Long from Michigan, who had a good combine. I haven't really watched him much yet, so I have to actually dig into his tape, but he had a good combine, so I'll be watching him next. I hope I like him, because right now I don't see really anyone in the draft who can replace Bryce Callahan if the Bears decide to go that route.
Do you think that can really play into that decision here for Ryan Pace if he sees the same thing as you?
Yeah, I think it has to. I mean, you have to plan out your offseason. So, you know, if you know you don't have a cornerback in the draft that you like, you might want to shell out a few more extra dollars for Callahan or someone else in free agency.
What about you, Chris? Is there any other position that underwhelmed you as much as corner underwhelmed Steve?
I'd have to echo what Steve said. You know, one position that there wasn't a ton of athletes at that I think fit well with this offense is offensive line. I like the 20-yard shuttle is a great drill to look at. For instance, James Daniels ran a 4.4 last year, and there was only one lineman who even remotely touched that territory, and he'll be gone long before the Bears pick. So athletically, I wasn't very impressed with the offensive line.
Well, that's a perfect segue to my next question here. And I'll go right back to you, Chris, to kick it off. Obviously, the offensive line, the starting five, they're locked up for the foreseeable future. But I still think that finding that eventual replacement for Kyle Long is not off the table in this year's draft. Do you see anyone currently who kind of fits that bill that would be available in the Bears draft?
Eric McCoy, he might. He's one of the few that did test well, but I think he'll be off before the Bears are picking. He didn't test great in the agility drills, but that's not always indicative of how good an offensive lineman can be. I think they're going to have to scour the late round boards. Like I said, it's not a very deep class, and when your first pick is in the third round, you don't. Offensive line isn't somewhere where you want to reach. We saw that with Jordan Morgan. They took a guy with raw skills, and sometimes it just doesn't manifest.
Absolutely. What about you, Steve? Do you have any other offensive linemen that are on your short list for like the Kyle Long replacement?
Yeah, one of the guys I did have written down was that Eric McCoy. But I do agree with Chris. I think he'll probably be gone before the Bears pick, but I think he'd be a good fit because he is a little bit more athletic guard/center. And then the other guy I wrote down who also might be gone when the Bears pick is Chris Lindstrom from Boston College. He ran a 4.54 in the three-cone drill, so not as athletic as James Daniels, but pretty athletic in his own right. Ran a sub-5.40, so I like him a lot as well. Again, both those guys might be gone when the Bears pick. I actually like the developmental offensive tackles more than I like the interior offensive linemen. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Bears go that route to kind of groom someone to take over for Bobby Massey in a few years.
Wow. No confidence in Rashad Coward, Steve.
Not yet. I got to see a little bit more.
Fair enough. Now, Steve, go ahead. Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, I was just going to say, I will say that I think when I first saw that the Bears hired Nagy, I was thinking that they were going to do a lot of zone. And then I noticed last year that they were running a lot of power and pulling guards and stuff. So I think it's kind of changed the profile for what they're looking for. And so there are guys, you know, that would fit that. One interesting player who actually played for Harry Hiestand is Alex Barge. I think he tore his ACL but he was still at the combine. That'd be an interesting fit, just because he did play for Harry Eastand, and I think he'd be available maybe the fourth or fifth round. So it's another interesting name.
Yeah, no, that's definitely one to keep in mind. Obviously, when you have a connection to any coach on staff, that definitely helps your chances, as long as there's a favorable memory that Harry has on that player. But Steve, going back to your article today on defensive players, and again, you can stick with defense, but I'll even open up this question for an offensive name or two. Do you have any quote unquote like biggest losers or duds from last week? Is someone that really disappointed you that you really thought would score much higher?
Yeah, well, I have two guys that I don't know if I thought they were going to be elite athletes, but they had terrible combines, and it was two guys that I really liked their tape too, which was super frustrating. But one of them was Mike Bell from Fresno State, the safety. I wrote about it a little bit today. He's a bigger safety. He was like 6'3", 210 pounds. So I didn't expect him to be an elite athlete, but he ran a 4.83 in the 40, and there's just no precedent for a 4.83 40 safety ever contributing in the NFL. So, and he was pretty much below average across the board. And the other guy was Elijah Holyfield from Georgia, the running back. He ran a 4.78 40. Again, didn't expect him to be a burner, but 4.78 is just outrageously slow. And then he was also below average in vertical and broad jump. So, and he didn't look good in the drills either. He was dropping passes. Yeah, I was super disappointed in both those guys.
Now, do you guys have a couple of players that maybe you didn't know a lot about before the combine that impressed you enough that you want to go ahead and take a deeper look into? And Chris, I'll go ahead and kick it over to you first.
Alex Barnes. He tested really well. He's a running back from Kansas State, and he's 6 foot 220, I want to say, and he's ran a 4.59, which is not great, but pretty good for that size. Bench press set a record for true running backs, jumped out of the building almost 39-inch vertical, was up there with broad jump, three cone, was really good for his size. He tested really well in every category, and I heard of him, but it's not like his numbers were.
Does a robot know you like a neighbor?
Insurance Corporation will fulfill request to cover anyone, anything, anytime, anywhere, with most standard algorithm in the order it was received. Please hold.
Robots don't know you. We do. At Farm Bureau Financial Services, getting the insurance coverage you need always starts with a conversation. Find a Farm Bureau agent at fbfs.com/protect. It's your future. Let's protect it.
Popping off the box score. So he's definitely someone I want to take a deeper look at.
What about you, Steve? Obviously, this question came from your article because there were a few players that you mentioned directly in it that you're like, I need to look a little bit more at their tape now. So I'm just curious, are there any of those players for you?
Yeah, well, Alex Barnes was one of them. I wrote him down. I did watch one of his games, and spoiler, Chris, it's not very good, so sorry about that. But the other guy I had was Mark Fields from Clemson, the cornerback. So I mentioned I don't think it's a very good cornerback class, so I'm hoping when I watch his tape, I see something good, because he did run a 4.37 and and did have 18 bench press reps. He didn't do any of the other drills, but a 4.37, I'm at least going to look that guy up. So I did look up his stats quickly, and he didn't play much for Clemson. So I'm not sure really what the issue is there. So I have to look into him. And the other guy was Ryan Bates from Penn State. He's an interior offensive lineman. He had a pretty good combine. I liked his agility drills. He had good size. So I'm going to look him up after this.
All right. Yes. Directly after this podcast.
Yes.
Not a moment to spare.
Yeah.
All right, so again, a lot of what I've heard from you guys in terms of the answers is some of these guys may have tested their way out of the Bears' range. A few may be available. So I'm curious of your overall assessment of the mid to late round talent so far this year, because obviously the Bears do not have a pick until round three. So with all of that you've taken in, do you believe that Ryan Pace will still be able to find that few quality of players in this year's draft to really help fill in some of these voids on this team? And I'll go ahead and begin with Steve.
Yeah, I mean, there are guys that they'll be able to get a start in the third round most likely, but I do think this is a weak class overall. It's definitely not as strong as last year, in my opinion. So they might only be able to get one starter out of this draft at best. But they'll be able to get a running back. probably in the third or fourth, and maybe one other position. But overall, I think it's a weak class. I'm not holding out too much hope for too many impact talent coming in.
What about you, Chris?
I tend to agree. I think the Bears are in a unique position because the positions that they do need, running back, safety, slot cornerback, are, well, just look at where their starters were last year. Fifth round Jordan Howard, fifth round Adrian Amos, undrafted free agent Bryce Callahan. So I think that's the unique position that they're in, is the spots where they have free agents that are going to hit the market, or they have, you know, a guy who may not be the best fit in Matt Nagy's offense. Those are the spots that are available in the mid rounds. But on the whole, I would agree with Steve. It's not like this draft class is dripping with talent. But I think, you know, guys like Justice Hill will probably be available in the third or fourth round. Definitely the third round, but I would think even the fourth round, who could be a good fit. And I think Alex Barnes will be there if they do like his tape. Unfortunately, Steve doesn't. I don't know. I've watched a little bit of him. I haven't watched a lot. He was underwhelming. I'd have to say the one game that I watched him too. But I think Ryan Pace has shown a knack for finding talent in the fifth round, third, fourth, and fifth round. So there's a reason he got that job, but I think it's going to be tougher than most years.
All right, guys, to wrap things up, do you have any other combine notes or takeaways that you want to share with our listeners? Chris, go ahead and begin.
I'm just going to say, you know, a guy who was injured that I think could be a fit. He actually had a down year, but Bryce Love, hearing what Matt Nagy wants, he wants a guy who hits the hole fastball. There's not a guy who hits the hole faster than Bryce Love. And he gets like this rep as, you know, someone who is running behind this elite offensive line in college, just because Stanford has had kind of a tradition with that. But I looked at some advanced statistics, and I've watched his games, and I don't think he was running behind anything special. I'm not even sure if they've even had an NFL offensive lineman in his time there. So he's an interesting name to keep an eye out for. He said he'd be ready for training camp. So he could be available in the fifth, or they don't have a sixth round pick, but could be available in the fifth round, maybe a sleeper there.
All right. How about you, Steve?
Yeah, I kind of talked about all the people I wanted to talk about. I just want to say, like, if you're looking at combine stats, don't focus too much just on the 40-yard dash, especially for, like, the running back position. You can be a little slower and still well in the NFL. The agility drills are more important, in my opinion, for most positions. So I just want to mention that. And also, don't count it twice. So if you know a guy is going to be fast and he runs fast, don't overreact to that. Or if you know a guy's going to be slow and then he runs slow, don't overreact to that. Trust the tape and just, yeah. That's all I wanted to say.
Some good advice. I like it. Thanks, guys, for hopping on today. That just about does it. I want to thank everyone for taking the time to listen to this week's episode. I hope that you found all of the information of value. And don't forget to head over to our blog if you want to read Steve and Chris's articles on the Combine. Plus, we have a lot more going on over there by our entire writing staff, so make sure to give them some support on our site, chicagoaudible.com. And don't forget to pick up your copy of Robert Peters' book, The 2018 Chicago Bears Complete Offensive Manual. It's available on Amazon today. You can quickly find it at chicagoaudible.com/book. We'll talk to you all in just a few short days as Nick, Brandon, and myself will provide you with our annual free agency preview show this Monday. But until then, have a great weekend, and of course, Bear Down Chicago.
How personalized can a financial plan be when it's created by one of those robo-advisors?
Plugging in standard algorithm to calculate insurance need and future wealth of random human client.
Robots don't know you. We do. At Farm Bureau Financial Services, getting to know you always comes first.
Together, we'll create a financial plan based on your specific goals. Find a local Farm Bureau advisor at fbfs.com/protect. It's your future. Let's protect it.